This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Well, I always feel that we should start a show with an air of positivity after listening to Zed Cars. However, we are starting a show for a team that currently have nil points in the Premier League. I'm here with the Watford Fan Show's very own Hornet's Nest man, Andy Lewis. Andy, no points in the Premier League this season. Another defeat, a second successive home game where you've conceded three goals. Talk to me.
Well, thanks, Matt, for rubbing it in at the very start of the show.
I just feel like we need to be realistic here. We could go on and say, oh, we were close and we nearly won it and it was okay and Will Hughes had a great chance to go ahead. But no, come on.
I thought I was coming in for the Ashes review show. That was going to be an hour of positivity. We were going to have a great Sunday night. And no, I am unfortunately here to talk about another defeat for the Hornets yesterday. Where do we start? Sitting in the studio before the show, we watched Newcastle beating Spurs. And suddenly we are the only team in the Premier League without a point to our name. And it is so demoralising seeing the other teams, the new teams that have come off all got a win under their belt. Newcastle and Brighton, who are predicted to struggle this season, all picking up points already. It is early days. It's only three games, but it doesn't look good after yesterday.
It doesn't look good. And when you listen to what the players were saying, Andre Gray saying we can't sit down and sulk about it, Tom Cleverley saying we can't feel sorry for ourselves, Javier Gracia, however, saying we need to improve something. I have to say, when listening to Javi yesterday and listening to what he said, I mean, we have a good balance, he said. I know it. We need to change that dynamic. I didn't feel like I was getting proper answers from him.
It's all very... A lot of the answers that, especially when teams go on these poor runs, are going to be sort of media friendly and kind of maybe what the fans want to hear. And I kind of like it in the sense that Javi has always been honest in his assessments. Like when we lost to Brighton, I think it was Ben Foster who said, you know, the opposition wanted it more, and Javi saying, you know, they deserved it, we simply weren't good enough. So Javi's honesty throughout his time at Watford has always been true. But there's no excuses. That's two home games on the bounce. I can sort of take Everton, the defeat at Everton, with a pinch of salt. We've never won up there before. They're a good side, and you go away from home to Goodison Park, it's always going to be a difficult test. But to lose both games, and no disrespect to Brighton or West Ham, we should be taking at least some points from them. I'm not going to sit here and preach and say we should have 6 or 9 points at the start of the season, but a team of Watford's quality, we should have taken at least 1 point out of our three opening games. It's not been good enough. And sitting there yesterday, what was frustrating is that we had the chances. You mentioned at the start of the show the chance for Will Hughes, which was kind of almost the turning point for the game. You know, the game was finally balanced at 1-0. We were all over West Ham for the first 15 minutes of the second half, all over them. I don't think they had a shot within that time period. And that chance from Hughes went begging. Miss of the season. It's so far, and it's probably going to stay that way for the rest of the season. You know, 2 yards out, came at him quick, but he even had time for a touch, potentially.
Do you know what? I'm disappointed in Will Hughes, because when you look at it again, and I kept rewinding it and pausing it as we do, and sort of fast forwarding it, slow forwarding it, as it were, tapping away at your remote just to do it in slow motion, he was slow to react. There was only one, and listen, we can go all the way back to however many years ago it was, 23 years ago, to Euro 96, and the infamous Gazza stretching for that ball across the box against Germany in the semi-final when Shearer volleyed it across. Andre Gray was only going to put that in one area.
Yeah.
Will Hughes should know that, but he took so long. He delayed his reaction, and as a result, he's a left-footed player, so it's not natural for him to go with his right foot. As he went with his right foot, it went over. I think he was at fault there, really, really at fault.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And it's about the anticipation as well. You know, we see the perfect example was in the same game as West Ham's second goal. I forget who got the assist, but passed it across the goal, and the striker's there anticipating it, getting in front of Dawson and poking it into the back of the net, and it was the complete opposite of what Watford should have done. Gray's been able to get himself into a position where he can pull it across the face of goal. Hughes should be there anticipating that. And to be honest, I don't I personally don't know why he's gone with his right foot. If he's a left-footed player, he should have his body shape in a way so that it's suited to his left foot. Because Gray's on the right, on the on the left-hand side, Hughes should be facing him, and that's rather than let it run across your body and poke it in with your right.
Yep.
If he's facing Gray, that's just a simple. It's a pass. It's not a shot. It's a pass into an empty net, and that's all he needed to do. His body shape was wrong. Anticipation was wrong. And I'm afraid to say it's probably cost us at the end of the day. But I can't single out Will Hughes when we had a defensive shambles.
No, and he had a decent game overall, really, when you look at it. But that effort was one of 23 efforts, just three on target, one of which went in. Mm. That is just not good enough.
No, it's not. I mean, like I said, the first 15 minutes of the second half were really encouraging. What was positive was Watford got themselves back in the game in the first half after, you know, 90 seconds in, conceding that penalty. A really well-taken goal from Andre Gray to get us level before half-time. And the start of the second half, we were electric. You know, the crowd were up for it. The players were getting forward. We were getting in behind West Ham's defence, putting in crosses. But like you said, we only had that one clear-cut chance with Will Hughes. A lot of the time it was get the ball into the middle, and then we just got crowded out by West Ham players. A lot of our shots were blocked. I don't think Fabianski really had a save to make within that spell. So for all that pressure, there was very little to sort of, well, to show for it in terms of attempts or attempts on target. It was very poor. And then I think, yeah, it's difficult to sort of pinpoint the blame. But when we had a drinks break yesterday at 60 minutes, which kind of almost sort of sapped the momentum out of us. And it's, you know, you can't, I'm not for a second going
to
blame
that. Is that enough to sap momentum, the drinks break?
I think it is. It's all, psychologically, it's a break in play. You're then stopping. You're allowing a team talk. It's like a timeout in basketball, essentially. And that's why coaches do it. If you're under the cosh, a basketball coach, a good basketball coach, will call for a timeout to just sort of kill the game a little bit, kill that momentum. I'm not going to sit here and say the drinks break cost us the points, because you know, they're human beings. They needed to drink water on a boiling bank holiday, but. After that, we didn't get back into our stride, and it was at that point that I felt that Javi should have made that double substitution of Welbeck and Sarr for them to come on. And he was going to bring Yanmat on, but then they scored, West Ham scored their second goal, and then he then put Yanmat back on the bench.
Terrible timing.
Got Welbeck and Sarr ready to come on, but by the time they come on, we were 3-1 down. The double substitution had to be at that drinks break, because I don't know why, maybe I'm just old school, why it takes so long to make a substitution nowadays. The players, they do their warm-up, they take their bib off, take their shirt off, they then get a whole rundown of the team tactics, and it's another sort of 5 minutes from the time they're called in from their warm-up to get them on the pitch. I don't know why it takes so long. If you know you've got that break in play coming up, that's a perfect time for me to make that double substitution, because you can integrate Sarr and Welbeck in that team talk. Show them the tactics whilst they're there, and then they're on, they're ready to go. You're not having to wait longer. And that was at 1-1. And that's the perfect time when we had that momentum, we had that pressure on West Ham, the perfect time to introduce those players, introduce some fresh legs, and we paid the price. And I'm sitting here moaning, I'm so sorry, because it's, yeah.
Listen.
I don't want to.
Listen, no, moan away. It's become part of the Watford fan show at the start of this season, which we hope won't be a trend moving forward, but it seems like the first 15 minutes of the show, we rant. And we moan and we complain about what happened in the game just gone. And you hope that it won't be the case. And with regards to substitutions, yes, absolutely. I agree with you. The modern footballer now seems to not be ready to come onto the field of play, which is completely alien to you and I. Absolutely. When they run them through the tactics, I mean, that is just a part of modern football, again, that drives me insane. You see these players standing on the side of the pitch looking at these, what I imagine are diagrams that they're showing, and thinking, I've got no idea what that means. I just want to get on and play football. And as old school as that sounds, that's 100% true, in my opinion. You mentioned Andre Gray, a very well taken goal. Didn't look up at the goal once, got the ball through from Will Hughes and finished perfectly. However, an interesting stat to come out of the weekend is that that's 13 goals in the Premier League for Andre Gray since he signed for Watford. Only one player has scored more. Troy Deeney has bagged one more, which is 14 Premier League goals. Andre Gray signed for Watford in the summer of 2017. That's 2 years, two seasons, 13 goals. Mm. It's not enough.
Is it? It's not. For a side like Watford that want to be challenging in the top half of the Premier League, it's not. His first season, 2017, was, yeah, because he was our record signing under Silva, and he didn't get going. I think in that first season he got maybe 3 or 4 goals. And last season, certainly towards the back end, when Javi started using him, he was coming off the bench and scoring goals. Last season he sort of it came out, but that first season he under Marco Silva. He never hit the ground running, and there were a lot of fans who were frustrated with Gray, and even some fans on, you know, it's keyboard warriors sometimes nowadays, isn't it? But some fans calling for us to sell him, like, well, yeah, we've just spent, what was it, I think 18 million for him, and you're going to say we're going to sell him at a potential loss? That's not how the Pozzos work. So frustrating start to his Watford career, but he'd done well in pre-season this year. He'd obviously done very well at the back end of last season. So it always takes a bit of time for a player to get used to a new club. And we know Andre Gray is a good player. We know he can score goals. It was just a case for him, I think, of just bedding him in. So hopefully this season, now he's sort of established himself at the back end of last season, we'll be able to see a lot more from him. But he took his goal very, very well yesterday. He didn't look once. Just that natural knowing where the goal is. Just a shame we couldn't back it up with some points.
Absolutely. You did mention the defence earlier on. That is now 41 goals in 18 games.
I mean,
that's it.
Wow.
18 games without a clean sheet as well on top of that. So it's 41 goals, but no clean sheet, which Ben Foster will be fuming about. We'll get onto him a little bit later, by the way, because there was a great moment in yesterday's game, of course, that we will talk about. But when I wasn't at the game, of course, but when you look at the highlights and the action that I've seen, there was just not enough commitment, it seemed. For the second goal, Arthur Masuaku managed to dance down that left side without really being challenged properly. No one was properly committed in the challenge for Allaire, not Haller, not Haller, Allaire, we're led to believe. His goal for West Ham United, Craig Cathcart kind of made a token jump, but again, not committed enough. It just seemed like there wasn't enough commitment yesterday.
And it's really frustrating to hear that, and it's really disappointing to sit there and watch it as well. For the life of me, we all saw last season that our defence simply wasn't good enough, and the fact we were able to challenge, for Europe up until the last few games, we were able to get to the FA Cup final with the defence that we had, was a credit to Javi, and was borderline a miracle. Considering, we do concede goals, we do ship goals. We've never, in our Premier League since we got promoted, we've never been confident of our defence. It's always been our weakness. Our midfield and our final third, our attacking players are excellent this season. I think they're really, really, really good. We've got plenty of talent in the likes of Deulofeu, Ismail Assar, Danny Welbeck, of course, Troy Deeney. But the back line has always been an issue, and I just cannot believe that especially after the drubbing we got in the FA Cup final, that our owners sat there and said, we only need to buy one more central defender in Craig Dawson, and that's going to be enough to shore up the defence. I can't believe we didn't spend, I don't care how much money, but more money on another centre-back or some more full-backs. I can't believe we didn't do more in the summer transfer. And I was saying that before the season. I don't want to sit here and say I blame Martin Trubbick, because plenty of Watford fans were saying it before the season. We knew that the defence was the priority almost in the transfer window, and that issue was not addressed, and we're paying the price for it currently. And it's really disappointing to see, because the second goal yesterday, a whole army could have walked through our defence. And watching the replay, Cathcart and Dawson just isn't working as a partnership, because I think Dawson's going with the man and Craig should follow the ball outwards, but Craig runs back towards goal, and suddenly the guy who gets the assist gets maybe, 5 yards of space within our 18-yard box, and that's just Sunday League defending. It's certainly not Premier League quality, and if we're going to persist with the quality of defenders that we've got and not address the issue, we have to wait until January now, then we could be in for a very, very long season. And I don't want to, I like the players in defence. They were fantastic last season, but we've seen other sides this season address their weaknesses. you know, Leicester have lost Harry Maguire this season and they're still doing all right, and they've brought in the players that they need to shore up the places that they've been weak, and we haven't done that.
Absolutely. So the only Premier League team with 0 points so far this season. We're not going to talk about that too much more, but we are going to mention seven successive games in all competitions, defeats for the first time in 20 years since 1999. That Newcastle game now is massive. Of course, this is the complete opposite of last season when you took 9 points from three games. Anyway, plenty of that, plenty of positivity coming up on the Watford Fan Show on Love Sport.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport and the Watford Fan Show with Andy Lewis from the Hornet's Nest. Myself, Matt Beadle here as well. We're going to get on to some more Watford chat. But first, a quick reminder that England, against all the odds, defeated Australia in the third test of the Ashes today. Ben Stokes, a redemption, you might say. He now is fully over the troubles and tribulations that he had a couple of years ago and batted out incredibly well to defeat Australia in that third test. We now go to Old Trafford in the fourth test, full of optimism, full of hope, full of dreams.
Absolutely.
Andy, which is what we're hoping Watford are going to be going to.
Nice.
When they go to Newcastle. Nice little segue there.
That was a very good segue, yeah.
Mm. Yes. And we're going to start. It was a very negative first 15 minutes. We're going to start this second segment by talking about Ben Foster. And often when we talk about Ben Foster, it tends to be a good thing, because we're talking about what a happy-go-lucky type of character who he is, or what a great save that he's made. And yesterday, despite the defeat, there was a big cheer at Vicarage Road because he denied Mikel Antonio when he was through on goal by rushing out of his goal and challenging him. And then Felipe Anderson, who's quite a tricky customer, Ben Foster, oh no, no, no problems. Don't try and do me, son. A centre-back-esque tackle and then just launched it with his right foot, his wrong foot, you might say, up the field.
Maybe that's what we need. We need to put Gomez back in goal and replace Craig Dawson with Ben Foster at centre-back.
The perfect answer to all your defensive problems.
There we go. We've sorted it, Matt. Watford Fan Show exclusive. Ben Foster at centre-back for Newcastle. It was brilliant. Like, but Ben, we've had a variety of keepers, shall we say, down the years at Watford. You know, we've had the fantastic likes of Alec Chamberlain, Aurelio Gomez, obviously Ben Foster, and then a few players, goalkeepers rather, that sort of stick in the memory for all the wrong reasons. Scott Loach being the main one that comes to mind.
An England hero, mate. Come on.
Well, certainly not a Watford hero. Bless him. But so many mistakes that nowadays, whenever the ball's like passed back to the keeper, my mum and I just get visions of Scott Loach missing the ball and it rolling under his foot into the net, or something going wrong. Almunia smacking it against a player and then rebounding into the net. So all sorts of problems down the years for Watford keepers. But Ben Foster, when he comes off his line, he doesn't half commit. And if the ball's, I can't remember what the score was yesterday, but West Ham were on the counter and Ben thought, I'm going for this and I'm gonna win it. When Ben starts going, he commits. And I won the first ball, and then we're thinking, oh God, you know, they've got an empty net. Ben's, 30 yards out of his goal, and makes a fantastic tackle, a fair tackle as well from behind. He manages to clearly pinch the ball whilst the Watford defence are rushing back, which brought a huge cheer on a otherwise glum afternoon.
Absolutely. I love Ben Foster. I think he's absolutely brilliant. I think the fact that he's quite open about the fact he doesn't take football too seriously. He just enjoys enjoys life. He says, look, if you make a mistake, get over it, enjoy it, enjoy football, enjoy being a footballer and just have a laugh. A great bloke, a great goalkeeper, and hopefully he will, lead Watford to a better time this season.
He's very chilled out, and I think that the supporters, I think, love that with him. You know, before the game, he's always chatting to younger fans, having pictures, signing autographs, etc. So he's an excellent ambassador for Watford, if you like, as well off the pitch.
He is indeed. Well, I'm delighted to say that now on the line we have Bradley Hayden, owner of the A Trip Down Vicarage Road podcast. Bradley, any particular Watford goalkeeper memories that stand out for you?
The main one for me, this is going to sound quite obvious, but it's a goal that will always stick with me. Partly because he played a massive part in it, and it's Manuel Almunia's double save from Anthony Knockhart in the playoff final back in 2013. The fact that it was a dive and the build up to it, and we're thinking, like, if this goes in, then it is the hopes of going to Wembley all over, and the fact Almunia saves it, and he's slow getting up from the initial save, and he's there to save the rebound as well. And I think we all know what happens soon after that, because it's always on Twitter about how it's one of the best goals ever scored. And I was in line on that penalty save that day, and I couldn't quite believe it. From agony to ecstasy in a matter of 30 to 40 seconds, it's definitely up there when it comes to one of the best saves I've seen from a Watford goalkeeper. But another one would be Gomez's double save against West Ham a couple of seasons ago. So that was terrific. But I think Almunia's against Leicester is one that will always stick out for me.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Bradley, because it feels like that double save often gets lost in the complete euphoria of what followed. Johnny Phillips's commentary, the play from Forestieri and the finish from Troy Deeney. And I feel like that save gets lost. Also gets lost is the touch from Akechi Anya, by the way.
Yes.
When that ball launched high into the air, and the fact that he killed that in an instant was probably, bar the save, the most important thing and the goal, of course, to happen in that move. Because had Ketch miscontrolled that, had it gone off for throw-in, we would never be talking about this incident. But he killed that ball from coming down from so high and continued the move, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely an underrated part of that move. Everything sort of fell into place then. Unfortunately, Anya never really sort of lived up to expectations after that. He was one of those that his final ball was never sort of one that you could rely on. But that touch, the boot clear from Cassetti, and that touch from Anya to launch us on the break, and the speed to get past, I can't remember who it was, one of the Leicester players, and the ball down the flank to Forestieri was a massive, massive part. And then you've got the lung-busting run from Jonathan Hogg, who never scored a goal for Watford. And you're thinking, for now, he's going to score his first ever goal here. But the awareness to pull it back to Deeney on the edge of the area, and Vidra sort of runs out of the way because Troy's screaming for it, but he wants it. Everything just fell into place then. And that was a perfect example of what Watford could do under Zola. Just go from one end to the pitch to the other in a flash with a fantastic, fantastic move. And that touch from Anya was superb. Everything fell into place that day. And what a game. And it's something that I'll never, ever, ever forget, because it was something that you just couldn't quite believe you were a part of, and something I still can't believe I'm a part of as well, because I've watched the highlights so much. I'll never, ever, ever get bored of watching that goal again.
I've just had a text from my mum, actually, wanting a shout-out to a goalkeeper memory that stands out for her. Two penalty saves from Aurelio Gomez away at West Brom in 2016, both against Sadio Berahino.
Okay.
And that we won that game 1-0, and that got us to the 40-point mark in our return to the Premier League. So two very, obviously, crucial saves, because it's a penalty, but of overall more importance for our
safety. I mean, in terms of the status of this show, I don't think we could ever get any greater than two texts from your mother to reveal that. Sorry, one text from your mother about two saves. So well done, Andy's mum. Brilliant.
There was someone listening other than Bradley. Bradley, yesterday, we're gonna have to bring it back to yesterday. Sadly, there was a lot of talk after the game, obviously, regarding Watford's defensive display. For you, where does the issue lie with Watford's current defence? Is it in the management and the coaching of Xavi, or do you think it lies with the recruitment over the summer, or perhaps a mixture of both?
Combination of both, to be honest, and I think players not playing to their ability as well. I've been massively disappointed with Kiko for many of this season. I think he's been caught out far too much at the back. I don't think Craig Cathcart's been his solid and reliable self as well. Dawson still looks like he's playing in the Championship. And Hollabas is starting to look his age, unfortunately, as well. So, as well, but what's important to remember as well is with Xavi last season, our defence for certain games, we were quite difficult to beat, and we didn't concede too many chances. And the amount of chances we conceded yesterday was just absolutely ludicrous at times. The amount of times, I lost count of the amount of times that it's just a simple long ball over the top, put a West Ham player through and they were left one-on-one with one of our defenders, or they were running at our goal. It was an absolute joke at times. And I think is what also needs to be pointed out as well is I don't think certain players are necessarily supporting our fullbacks as well. I think Decore has been quite poor this season, and if you look at left back yesterday, Hollabas, the amount of times in the first half where Hollabas was left one on one with Frederiksen and Anderson as well, that was just there was nothing he could do, and Decore at times didn't know whether to come over and help him out or whether to stick in midfield. So I do think it's a combination of recruitment. I do think that we should have perhaps spent some of that SAR money on getting another centre-back in. Part of it, I do think, is down to coaching, the fact that we've not really improved in defence over the past 3 weeks. And I don't think players are performing well, but I think we say yesterday about the going forward, I thought we were quite good yesterday, apart from the fact that obviously Hughes' glaring missed. I thought we played some good football at times, but our defending left a lot to be desired, and that's the reason why we lost that game.
And Bradley, where do you stand on the argument, or the rumours rather, of Javi Gracia potentially facing the exit door after just 3 games of this season?
I'm not surprised, because if you lose 2 or 3 games in the Premier League, it seems that your manager's future is often going to be questioned. So I'm not too surprised, given our start to the season as well, the fact we've conceded, 7 goals in 3 games and only scored once. It's not a good record. I can see where they're coming from. We've seen with the Potts days before that they're not afraid to hang about if they can see that something's not going right, or if things are not going to plan. And they're very quick to change with Sanchez Flores at the end of the season. They're very quick with obviously dispensing of Billy McKinley when they realise that he potentially wasn't the right man going forward. So I'm not surprised that we're talking about Gracia's future, and obviously with Newcastle winning today and our 3 defeats to start the season, that game next week is absolutely massive, especially the fact we've got Arsenal and Manchester City after the break. So if we don't get any sort of result against Newcastle, then we're potentially talking about six defeats from the first 6 games. Which is a terrible start to the season, and you sort of question then whether we're going to be start to be cut adrift. So next weekend against Newcastle, it's hard not to sort of somewhat it's hard to sort of say, but it's a massive, massive game, and one that we simply have to be getting a result from. And if we don't, then I wouldn't be at all surprised if those rumours of Gracia's future start to get even stronger, and then we start to look at who we then get in next. But you never sort of know we're going to get in next, because the Potsays always seem to pluck someone out of nowhere. So, I'm intrigued to see where we sort of look at next week, and if we have come away with Newcastle with a defeat, I wonder whether this time next week we'll be talking about Javi Gracia leaving Watford. But hopefully it doesn't come to the case. But next weekend's game is massive, massive game.
Massive indeed. Bradley Hayden, thank you very much for joining us. That was Bradley Hayden, owner of the A Trip Down Vicarage Road podcast. Right, we're half an hour down on the Watford Fan Show on Love Sport. Next up, we're going to look ahead to the Carabao Cup clash with Coventry.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
Oh, that can only mean one thing, Andy, that it is the opposition view on the Watford Fan Show on Love Sport with Andy Lewis from the Hornet's Nest and myself, Matt Beadle. And it is the opposition view because on Tuesday, Watford faced Coventry in the Carabao Cup. League One's Coventry, who are yet to lose a game this season. We've got Joey Crone on the line from the Knee Lamptey Show. How are you doing, Joey?
Yeah, very well. How are you?
Very, very well, thanks, mate. It's not been a bad start to the season for you guys.
When we drew 0-0 with Bolton, we weren't thinking it was going to be the best to start the season, bearing in mind that everyone's tonked 5 past them since. But that game aside, and that was obviously a very strange game with some odd circumstances, but it's been sort of cautiously optimistic so far.
Hi there, it's Andy here from the Watford Fan Show. What's it like at Coventry this season? Because obviously you've having to ground share with Birmingham City. How did that come about, and what's it actually like to be in a Coventry City fan position at the moment?
We've sort of become very immured. If that's not the word, is it? We've become very sort of used to this kind of constant nonsense now. And actually, there's a level to which when we moved to Northampton, people were vehemently up in arms for good reason. And the people that are vehemently up in arms now, we've got good reason to be so. But the majority of fans seem to sort of accepted the St Andrews move. There's more fans gone there. It is a bit closer, a bit more accessible. But it's always mental being a Cov fan over the last 10 years. And yeah, actually, it has been smoothed over somewhat. One, by the fact that we've had a constant manager who people like. We do seem to have a decent team-ish at the moment, and the results have been going our way. So the noise hasn't been quite so loud.
And there's a bit of a Coventry-Watford link for this game with a potential return of Brandon Mason to Vicarage Road. How's he getting on with life at Coventry so far this season?
So last season, he was good. He was pretty much first-choice left-back for most of the season, despite the fact that he got two competitors. This season, he's been incredible. Like, he's come back an entirely different player. So he's been man of the match in the last three games from left-back. Admittedly, we've not scored a tremendous amount, but his defensive and attacking contributions have been really, really, really good. He's massively one to watch at the moment because he's come back an entirely different player. Very, very impressive indeed.
Joey, I've got to ask you, you mentioned Mark Robbins there and the fact that you've had a manager for a slightly longer period than usual. Seems like a very honest bloke, seems very down to the point, very frank. Do you think that he can take you back into the Championship? And in terms of, I don't know, going forward and Coventry and getting back to the good times, are there hopes that maybe you can get back to those good times that we remember from the late 80s and early 90s? In fact, the late 90s, of course.
No, I don't think it's possible. No, we're still very, very, very early in the season. We've had quite a fortuitous run of fixtures in the league. And actually, the one that we really should have won, we didn't. And we could have thrown it away on Saturday. We were very, very, very comfortable indeed, but ended up in the second half making quite heavy weather of it. The Portsmouth game, obviously, was a very, very good indication. To be able to see that out and pull a draw out with nine men on the pitch was fantastic. We're quite solid, so we're built defensively very well, and that we've just added Callum O'Hare, who I believe is meant to be very good, a young player from Villa who is going to try and fill a creative role that was left when Bright Enda Bakari went back to Wolves last season. But largely, kind of, our thing is nick a goal, keep it tight at the back, and Robbins is kind of very good at organising a team like that. We do look okay this season. I'm hoping that it will continue, but we will have to wait and see once we've got a couple of injuries and we face some sterner tests.
Now, Joey, you've obviously made an unbeaten start to your season, and you're coming up against the only Premier League side to not have won a single point so far. You must be feeling actually pretty confident ahead of Tuesday night of a cup upset.
No, I think we'll get swatted away. I imagine that even I'm sort of eternally pessimistic. But I just think this is a very good opportunity for Watford, who actually are a very good side. A team that I've watched quite a lot and last season really enjoyed watching with Delafeo and players like that. But I just think there'll be one or two players that will step in. I imagine you won't play a full first team, but that you're kind of, you know, one and a half team, as such as it will be, will still have enough power to knock us aside. We might, but I just think that you'll end up playing, but you'll still have one or two players who'll have more than we can really handle.
What are your thoughts ahead of it, Joey? Because promotion out of League One is obviously the priority, but we tend to see goal fests in the opening rounds of the Carabao Cup. It tends to be frowned upon from the lesser Premier League sides, shall we say, those outside of the top six. So on one hand, I get what you're saying, but on the other hand, this is an opportunity, you know, for Coventry to actually cause an upset.
It is, you're right. It depends on how... The problem is, and you know a lot more about Watford than I do, but it doesn't seem like there's some terrible rot that's set in. So we're not playing some team that are on a downward spiral over the course of... If we're playing Newcastle at the minute, then maybe I'd say, yeah, do you know what, I'd fancy it. Grathia, I believe, is very highly thought of at Watford still, even though I've heard talk about him being sacked. This seems more like a blip for Watford rather than any kind of long-term sort of problem. And I just think that ultimately it feels more like what will happen is it will be a good opportunity to build some confidence your end rather than our end. I also don't think, and hopefully I'm not speaking for Cov fans here, for me I sort of think if we got knocked out of the cup at this point, I'm not going to lose too much sleep over it.
Yeah, it's funny how often you hear that from various fans stretching from the Premier League all the way down to League Two, to be honest, because fans are just more content on getting promotion from out of their league. Before you go, Joey, you've got to get a score prediction from you. Although I kind of feel after this chat that I know which way you're going to go.
I'd say a sort of semi-comfortable 1-0 Watford win.
Any 1-0 win for Watford is never comfortable. So even semi-comfortable, never, ever, no. I'll just let you know, Joe, we have a terrible record against lower league opposition in the League Cup. You know, lost the likes of Doncaster, Bradford, Gillingham, all in recent seasons. So if I were you, I'd be feeling a little bit more confident ahead of Tuesday night.
Well, I tell you what, the one thing is that it should be an interesting game because I don't think we'll let you win easily. And I think if you come at us, that will play into our hands. So I think it could be, like I say, there's possibility of an upset. And I think it'll be quite a good game, but I just think it'll probably have a bit too much for us.
Lovely stuff. Joey Crone from the Neil Lamptey Show, thank you very much for joining us. That was Joey Crone. I have to say, Andy, that the only time you appear to have played Coventry in the League Cup was in 1981, and it was a 7-2 aggregate victory for Coventry.
Ah, well, 7-2, that would be a bit of a... Well, I think Harry Grassier would definitely go if we lost 7-2 on Tuesday night, so...
I mean, we spoke to Bradley about that and the rumours that his job might be under debate. There might be a bit of pressure. What are your thoughts on this?
Like Bradley, I'm not surprised that it's under question. Difficult because if we do... Newcastle suddenly becomes a must-not-lose game because the fixtures we have coming up in September are horrible. We've got Arsenal at home and then City and Wolves away in two incredibly difficult places to go to. If we lose against Newcastle, I'd be very disappointed, but it wouldn't surprise me if the Potsos act. I would partly think it would be very unfair on Javi because, you know, of what he achieved last season, I don't think he's been given... the right tools in terms of recruitment for the defence. I think if we had bought, you know, better defenders and we'd had this horrible start to the season carrying on from the back end of last season, I'd kind of understand it a bit more. But what disappoints me is we've now got this stability that we've kind of craved since we got promoted again. And to just sort of not throw it away, the owners would have their reason if they got rid of Javi, but I think you can't purely pin the blame on Javi when the recruitment of the back line has been so poor over summer. I think it would be very harsh on Javi to get rid of him.
And just on this game in particular, it's funny because I imagine if I'd asked you this at the same time last season as to what you were hoping for a result against Coventry, having won your first three games in the Premier League season, you'd say, do you know what, if we go out, it's not a big deal and I'm not that bothered about the result. Now, are you kind of thinking that, do you know what, we need to win this?
Pretty much, yeah. I'm kind of wanting to see the first team start this game because I think they need confidence. It wouldn't surprise me if we see the same back line just to get a bit of more playing time together. I do think it will maybe start with Cabaselli instead of Dawson. I think Cabaselli's the closest one sort of knocking on Javi's door to replace one of the two centre backs. I'd love to see Domingos Quina. I've been a bit disappointed that he hasn't featured in the last two games, even though he's been on the bench. I think Saar will start. I think Welbeck may start just to get some match fitness. So I'm expecting actually a pretty strong Watford 11 on Tuesday night.
Okay, we're not met Coventry since two goalless draws in the 11-12 season. It's Coventry on Tuesday, and then next up, it's Newcastle in the Premier League, a massive game. We're going to be speaking to Anthony Rutherford, presenter of the North East Football Show, next.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
This is the Watford Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with Andy Lewis from the Hornets Nest. It's that time of the week when we reflect and we look back to players from the past. And this week, Andy, it's the one, it's the only, it's the Hyder, the Helgeson.
It's H.
H.
H. We just call him H.
Nice.
He's just
not double H.
No, not double H, just H.
Okay.
If you go to any Watford fan and say, oh, do you remember H? You're like, oh yeah, I remember Hyder Helgeson. It's like, oh yeah. He's just, okay. A single letter is all he needs because he's
Brilliant.
That good.
Wow, that's amazing. So memories of H.
Well, the reason he's our legend of the week is because it was his 42nd birthday. Wow. On the 22nd. So a very happy birthday, Hyder. two spells at Watford, 99 to 2000, then came back on loan for Watford for the 09-10 season. 228 appearances with 76 goals in them. My favourite Helgason memory, or my earliest one actually, is in the FA Cup run to the semi-final in 2003. We were Championship side and Premier League opposition West Brom came to Vicarage Road, packed out the away end, filled the entire stand, and a lone Heider Helgason goal was enough to send the Baggies out of the cup. So fantastic player, my Watford hero in all honesty. You know, whilst all my friends were prancing around the playground when I was younger pretending to be Van Nistelrooy or Thierry Henry, I was an Icelandic god, just towering above all of them, winning the headers. So I was always Helgason in the playground. So my favourite Watford player. So that's partly why he's Legend of the Week as well.
I love that, because he came into a Watford side, didn't he, that was struggling in the Premier League at the time. Graham Taylor brought him in. By the way, I've done a massive disservice to a certain Richard Lee here in the fact that we were talking about Watford goalkeepers of the past and we didn't mention him. So I will get a slap on the wrist. So Richard, if you are listening, of course you were a Watford great of the past. But I remember him telling me about Heider Helgason in training and saying that he tried to teach Rich about penalties. Because if you watch a Heider Helgason penalty, I'm sure you're aware, his technique and the way that he took a penalty in the mind games was that he would barely look at the ball. He'd keep his eyes focused on the goalkeeper and run up to the ball, like a bit like we've seen with Lyle Taylor with Charlton this season. He will keep his eye on the goalkeeper and only at the very last millisecond will he look at the ball, and pretty much scored, I think, 90% of his penalties.
Yeah, interesting. I don't recall, because I was quite young in the Heider Helgason era, and obviously when he came back on loan, he was only there for sort of 29 games. I don't remember too many of the goals. I sort of faded in my memory a little bit. I just remember, you know, idolising him and pretending to be him whenever I kicked a ball. But I was actually there for his debut in the 3-2 home defeat against Liverpool in 1999. So that was quite nice to sort of look back and realise that was his debut. And so, oh, that was like my third Watford game, I think. So quite nice I was there. Let's see it all start.
Very nice. I like that. Well, that is this week's Legend of the Week, Heider Helgason. And now we are going to move on to the weekend's game against Newcastle. We've got Anthony Rutherford, presenter of the North East Football Show, on the line. Anthony, I've got a feeling you're in pretty good mood today.
I'm in a lot better mood than the last couple of times I spoke to you guys down there. I'm thinking this could have been a terrible Sunday. I'm going on holiday tomorrow as well, and I was thinking, you know, this is going to set my holiday up horrible, playing Tottenham at home. But you know what it is? It's been the best result we've had for a long time.
I must admit, Anthony, it's a little bit selfish of you to leave Watford with 0 points and claim your first 3 points of the season. How on earth did you manage to beat Spurs away from home? I managed to catch the second half. I saw Spurs had pretty much, as you'd expect, the majority of possession. Obviously, a fantastic win. How did you do it?
It sort of reverted back to type, more or less. I mean, I've gone on about how I didn't think Rafael had done that well. I thought, you know, he kept up and all the rest of it. But then we've sort of, the last two games has been all over the shop. I've watched the tactics and the teams just, you know, I wasn't looking forward to even playing you guys next weekend because you would batter us. But then today, we've stuck 10 players behind the ball. We've worked our backsides off. We've won everything we needed to. We've passed when we needed to. It was just completely different to what I've seen over the last two games. And to be honest, it was a little bit more. When we broke, we looked like we could create a little bit more rather than when we were with Rafa. We sort of stopped at the halfway line and would turn back and we'd play across the back four a little bit. Whereas today, every time we sort of got a chance, Almiron or Richie tried to play it forward to Jalinto, and he done well. He held it up really well. He sort of looked a little bit more comfortable on the ball today. The last two games, he's sort of, things have bounced off him. He hasn't really had much to do because the ball's either been flying over his head or it's been going down the channels, where today they've used him brilliantly, to be honest, and he's done everything that Harry Kane didn't do today. And by the way, don't put words in my mouth there by thinking that I think he's better than Harry Kane, because he's nowhere near. But you watch the two players, and Harry Kane just drifted out of the game, whereas Jalinto was saying to come into it the more the game went on, you know.
Anthony, dare I say it, that you just suggested that a Newcastle Steve Bruce side, has done something more positive than a Rafa Benitez side has done?
Well, I'm one of the only, I think I'm maybe a 2%er up here, because I've getting battered for months now because of my stance on the way the team's been playing and the sort of hype that Rafa Benitez has had over the last 2 years. We got promoted with the biggest budget I think the Championship's seen, and then we finished 10th, but we sort of level on points with three other teams, and it was a bad season for a lot of teams that year. And then last season we sort of, you know, ended up a good second half of the season, but the football I watched was terrible. Mm. You know, we sort of defensively were brilliant, but yeah, a lot of the fans thought that the defence thing was good because we had conceded less than Man United, but Man United were miles ahead of us in the league, so it doesn't really go off that. You need to score goals as well. But all I wanted to see last season was now and then when Almirón come into the team, when we were breaking, go forward. Once we got to the halfway line, there was always that little bit of doubt in the players' minds where they looked like they were told, once you get over there, if there's nothing on, come back and do that nice little pretty thing where they played across the back four. We haven't got that kind of players that can build up, you know, an attack by, say, a Man United or a Liverpool who can do that, and then they've got that one player who can play a ball through the middle and score, you know. So I think we need to be on the front foot constantly. And with I can't even pronounce his name, St. Maximum.
Alan St. Maximum.
Yeah, he looks a little bit of a funny one. Maybe he's a throwback to Asprilla when he came in. You know, he could be absolutely horrendous for 89 minutes and then score your worldie. But I haven't seen that yet from him. When he went off, we looked a little bit more, I know he wasn't on very long, but we looked a little bit more sort of compact. You know, the team sort of set up, and when Atsu come on, his work rate's great. Him and Richie, they don't stop, you know. So, like I say, I think we've got a little bit more about us. I think Bruce will give them the option to go for it. I think he'll not put the reins on. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing remains to be seen. I think we'll know at the end of the season about that, because we could get battered 3 or 4 nil off a team, and I could be completely wrong, but... But yeah, off today's performance, I'm very confident that we'll stay up and start attacking teams a little bit more. Now, even though we're defending for 90 minutes.
Now, you're obviously coming up against a Watford side on Saturday who are desperate for their first points of the new season. How do you see this one going? Give us a quick score prediction.
Right, so before today's game, I would have honestly said I think this would have been your first win of the season. I think I was thinking in my head maybe 3-0. But after today's game, I think we'll nick it 2-1. I think we'll nick it 2-1. I think yous are desperate for it. The only positive from you guys is that we'll have a lot of pressure on us going into this game because it's a home game. And now there's a little bit more expectation after the win. I know we didn't play attacking football, and you know we had, I think that 90% of the possession Tottenham, but there is now that expectation of getting the first win and keep it going. So I think that'll be on your hands a little bit, because the players might be a little bit nervous and you guys are going to be chomping at the bit to get the win.
Anthony, thank you very much for joining us. That was Anthony Rutherford, presenter of the North East Football Show. Right, Andy, time to go, but a quick score prediction. Both games for you, please.
Both games. A comfortable 3-0 win on Tuesday against Coventry, and then we have to win 2-0. On Saturday.
To win those first points in the Premier League.
Did I just say a clean sheet? 2-1. 2-1. We're not going to keep it.
He's gone back against himself already. That first win has to be on the board next week against Newcastle. This is the Watford Fan Show. We'll be back next Sunday at 7 p.m. We'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. We'll be right back.